Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
I know it's Thanksgiving weekend, but Bob covered gratitude so well last week. I want to talk about something a little bit different. Thanksgiving Day, I had a family Thanksgiving up at my niece's house. They live up in Suwannee, so I got my passport and drove out to Suwannee. And anyway, we had 20 people or so. My wife and I went up there, and but it was my mother, all my siblings, which is sister and two brothers, all the nieces and nephews and grandchildren, all of them were there, and we had a regular Thanksgiving. But then on Friday, because everybody was in town, we decided to celebrate my mother's 90th birthday, which comes in a few weeks, a little bit early. So one of my brothers, my sister, decided that we'd create a slideshow, but they didn't know how to do it, and they didn't have the time, so it fell to me. So anyway, I got, with the help of my fabulous wife, learned the software and did all the stuff and created a slideshow of about 150 pictures going back to the early 1920s, pictures of my parents, of my mother's parents' wedding in 1922 and all these different things, and had all these pictures, and they were about 7-8 seconds each and all this stuff and everything. But, you know, we were looking at it, and the pictures were great, so we added music. And it was like, you know, Barbara Streisand, The Way We Were, and Frank Sinatra, That's Life, and finished with Sunrise, Sunset from, you know, Fiddler on the Roof and all that stuff. And the music transformed the whole thing, changed the thing. It made it so emotional and powerful, because I've always felt that music was one of the most incredible, powerful forces that there really is. I've always loved music. I don't play an instrument except for my iPod and a little bit of guitar. You know, every boy my age, I'm in my 60s now, learned how to play three chords on the guitar so you could play Louie Louie and Gloria and the two or three songs from the 60s and that. But it always amazes me when somebody can take a box of wood and a few pieces of metal string there and make these sounds that kind of transport me to another place. Or when Peter, every time he's up here, or Tom or Patrick, our keyboard people, take the same 88 keys or however many there are on there and this computerized gizmo here, and they tap into some bottomless wellspring of creativity like he just did to play some song that they may have written from scratch or that they, you know, got from someone who wrote it many years ago. Now, it's kind of funny when you think about it, because on a purely scientific level, if we're listening to an actual piano, like the grand piano we used to have over at the Woodruff, for example, the music that we hear is just somebody hitting a lever where this little fuzzy hammer hits a metal piece of string, and that creates vibrations that move the air. Those vibrations reach our eardrums, and the nerves in our ear send a message to our brain that we interpret as something we call music or sound, whatever. But that's just the physical part of the process. That's the part we can see and we can explain scientifically. The really interesting part, the part I love, comes before that and after that. Before we hear the song and after. And here's what I mean. You see, before Peter starts to play here, he's already picked a song a week or two ago, because I told him what the topic was, either a song he wrote or a song someone else wrote, whatever, and he has to teach himself how to play it. But think about where that song came from, especially if it's like a classical piece or an oldie but a goodie, maybe from the 50s or the 60s, whether it was written by Beethoven centuries ago or by Chuck Berry in the 50s or whatever it is. You know, that song, whatever it is, came from the mind of a composer who took the same notes that have existed for billions of years since time began and combined those notes in a way that had never been done before. Never, ever been done before, okay? In all of history, they had never been done before, and they did it to create a unique and recognizable melody that could last forever, not as a physical thing, but as an idea, as a totally new idea that could be transferred from mind to mind over the centuries or transferred across the face of the earth. Not only that, this amazing artiste we have here, Peter, of course, who's playing, even though he undoubtedly took a lot of lessons early on through the years, I'm sure he did, and he practiced thousands of hours on a lot of different kinds of music, he's still putting his own unique touch on the song every time he does it, Whenever he comes up here, when Patrick comes up and they sing One Power, that wonderful song from Daniel Namod, every time they do it, it's different. Never the same two times, which means even if he played the same song 1,000 times, okay, that's a little bit different, just like Monica playing the harp or Eric playing the classical guitar when he comes here, okay? Every time we hear a song, the creative process has already been at work, sometimes over a period of hundreds of years, okay? And then, that long before we hear the first note, but then think about what happens after we hear the song. Okay? Because what happens when the music reaches our brain? Because that's where we interpret it, every one of us in a different way. I mean, the truth is, when Peter or any of our musicians play a song here, no two people in this auditorium hear the same song. We don't. Not just because our hearing is different. I know there's frequencies I have lost throughout the years, okay? But we hear different because we don't just hear with our ears, we listen with our heart, our mind, and our spirit. That's what happens when we're listening to music. That's why a certain combination of notes, especially when you add some really great lyrics, can make us either laugh or cry, like some of those good old Broadway musicals. How many people like musicals here? Okay, everybody's got your favorite, I'm sure. I mean, think about The Sound of Music, Fiddler on the Roof, West Side Stories, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, you know, all these great different musicals, and how powerful all those songs are, how they affect us emotionally and spiritually. Because music can make us fall in love, okay? It can help heal the pain of loss. It can even overcome our deepest fears, which is why soldiers over the last several thousand years have always marched into battle with the sound of drums or trumpets or bagpipes, stirring the soul, all that kind of stuff. Of course, at the other end of the scale, it's also nice to snuggle in front of a fireplace with your sweetie, listening to Ravel's Bolero playing in the background. Remember that? So, and that's why the music we listened to when we were teenagers makes us think back to the time we were at the prom or dating somebody or whatever it was, okay? Or why we'll never forget the music that was played at our wedding or at our mother or father's funeral or whatever it happens to be. Because good music is almost magical. It's almost magical. It plants itself in our memory. It touches our soul. It moves us spiritually. That's why Thomas Carlyle, a very famous historian and writer, once wrote this. I love this. He said, "Music is the language of angels that brings us near to the infinite and lets us gaze inside." And lets us gaze inside. Now, the title of my talk, if you looked at the newsletter, is The Music of Life, all right? And I wanted to do a talk about this for a long time, not just because I love music, as most of you do, but because music is a perfect metaphor for God. You may not have thought about it, but it is, for this power of life that we see in everything all around us. Music, by which I mean really, really good music, and what qualifies as good depends on the person, it means different things to different people. Really good music exists in what I like to call the crossover space. It's a crossover space. That's the place where the physical and the spiritual blend together, like where energy and matter are the same thing in different forms, or light and shadow affecting us on several different levels at once. Music is a language that goes beyond cultures and national boundaries, but it can also be a language that expresses individuality or national identity, like a national anthem. Music is the ultimate creative idea. It's a thought that shapes other thoughts. That's why musicians who write music hitchhike or stand on the shoulders of the people who wrote the songs before, okay? It's an idea. Music is an idea that can be transported across time through voice. It can be done through instruments. It can be done on paper. It can be over the internet. It can be carried through the air. And it amplifies whatever emotion it's dealing with wherever it appears. That, to me, is God. That's spirit at work. Now, churches and politicians have known this for a long time because patriotic songs stir the soul, and like John Philip Sousa's marches and the songs from the civil rights era. I mean, when you hear Lift Every Voice and Sing, it probably really moves you. Or We Shall Overcome, all of us, you know, whatever it happens to be, these kind of songs lift us all up together. They make us feel like we're all one voice. So music both elevates us and it unifies us. Elevates us and unifies us. That's why we sing the Star Spangled Banner before sporting events instead of reciting it together. It's much more powerful when we sing it. That, to me, is spirit at work. I mean, this emotional power that music has over us starts very early, because one of the very first sounds that we ever heard, even though we can't remember it on a memory level, is the rhythm of our mother's heart beating. That's the first sound any of us ever really identified with. When she was resting or in a peaceful state, okay, her heart beat slow and steady, and we were probably very calm. But if she got excited or upset or whatever it happened to be, then our heart started beating faster too, to match hers, all right? There's no question that we were affected. There have even been studies written about the music that a mother listens to while the child is in the womb will affect the child permanently and profoundly, all right? There's a rhythm of life that we are all born into. Now, I also believe that one of the reasons that life becomes difficult for us sometimes is because we lose touch with that rhythm. We lose touch with the rhythm of life that's so naturally a part of us even before we are born. And the music that we love, whatever music we choose to listen to, and all of us are different, is such a perfect metaphor for all the different ways we go about living life. For example, this is kind of a visual I had. I'm sort of a visual person. If you looked at life as some cosmic jukebox that had an infinite number of selections, okay, and it was all free, so you all had all the slugs you want to pick all the songs you want, that'll give you an idea how strange it is that we should ever be unhappy with the way we're living, which a lot of people are. I mean, even though we have the power to create whatever we desire, like Lee was talking about in terms of manifesting and prosperity, and we have the power to pick all sorts of different choices, we still end up where we don't want to be, doing things we don't want to do with people we don't want to be doing them with. Some people, that happens a lot. It's like somebody looking long and hard at this jukebox, at all the selections in a jukebox. This is what life is like for some people. And they pick out a song they hate, and they play it 27 times in a row. That's really how some people live their life. They keep selecting the same, I think I'll pick that relationship problem again. You know, B27, I think I'll pick that money problem again. I think I'll pick that work problem again. And they do it over and over again. It's like they are living a country song, you know, a country lyrics kind of thing. And you know people as well as I do who live their life like that. I believe that this spiritual essence that we have inside of us has its own favorite music written especially for us. For each one of us. Everybody's song comes from the same source, from the same basic notes, but there's an infinite variety of styles and melodies that we all can choose from. There are all sorts of different rhythms, all sorts of different music. And our own individual song is completely unique. Completely unique. That's why part of our goal in creating and practicing this thing called life should be to figure out what our soul's music is. What our soul's music is. In other words, by going inside from time to time and just listening, we can discover some amazing things if we can get into the rhythm. We can discover what we love to do, what we love to play, who we love to be with, all these different things. That's where our music comes from the things we love. Okay, that's where we can learn how to not just find out what it is, but learn to play that music in our life. And once we start doing that, we can start harmonizing with it, and we can start varying it a little bit. We can start living our life in a little different way, because the variations in music, just like life, are infinite, absolutely infinite. I mean, each one of us has our own song, but it's kind of like we're playing in an orchestra with the rest of the people on the planet, like the Atlanta Symphony, all right? Every instrument is unique. Every instrument on the stage, and there are, what, 120, 150 different instruments, has its own special sound. You got the horns and the woodwinds and the drums and the strings and all of them. And every instrument has its own individual part to play. And every musician playing that instrument has their own part to play. You got first horn, second horn, all those different things. And if any one instrument is out of tune, or if it starts playing somebody else's part, whatever, everybody notices. Everybody notices, because the whole orchestra sounds out of tune. So everybody has to be in tune, play their own instrument, but they also have to remember that they are a part of something greater. Just like they're a part of the greater orchestra, we are a part of the greater humanity. And when everything gets back in tune and back into harmony, things work. Things work. But the orchestra doesn't just walk out there one day and start playing something they've never played before. They have what? Rehearsals, right? They have rehearsals, which leads me to the subject of practice. Okay? All of the beautiful music that we have ever heard or ever will hear is the result of conscious and deliberate effort by the part of someone, and talent and skill are also a part of that, you know, becoming a successful composer or musician. But even the best composers and musicians in the world have to continually hone their skills with practice. Right, Peter? Practice, practice, practice. In fact, practice is the most reliable predictor of success if you are a musician. Or for that example, if you're an artist, or an engineer, or a doctor, or a lawyer, or an airline pilot, or anyone else who wants to become really good at what they do. Remember what your mother told you, or your father, or your grandparents, whatever it happens to be? Practice makes perfect, right? That's what we were taught. Now, I think that ought to say practice plus passion makes perfect. But you kind of get the picture. We kind of realize where we are. But the question I have, because we all understand this, or at least we should, is why are we so surprised when we are told that becoming spiritually enlightened or spiritually aware, if you like that word better, also requires a certain amount of conscious and deliberate practice? Why does that surprise us, okay? It amazes me through all the years I've been in this, how many people seem to think they can show up on Sunday morning or listen to a talk maybe once or twice a year and maybe read one of the books from Oprah's list. And they think that they can develop this advanced consciousness that will carry them through life's problems that they run into along the way. And then they're surprised when it doesn't happen. They're surprised when they have not established that kind of thing. But they shouldn't be at all. There's an old saying I like. I know, Bob, you probably heard this. It said, being in church doesn't make you a Christian any more than being in a garage makes you a car. Okay? Now, think about what that means. That same principle applies to practicing our spirituality. The most important part of our spiritual practice is not what form it takes, not the language you use or what we do with our hands or our body or kneeling or whatever it happens to be. The most important of our part of our spiritual practice is the consciousness we do it with. The consciousness we do it with. It's not what our hands are doing. It's what our mind is doing. It's what our heart is doing. It's what our spirit is doing, okay? You see, practice, whether it's piano practice or tennis practice or spiritual practice, they're all different practices, has to be internal to be effective. It has to be in here. And by that I mean it has to be done out of a desire to express the best of ourselves with a deep sense of joy in the process of learning. We have to love the learning process of the practice. I mean, we can learn techniques from other people. We can read the books and all that stuff. And that may get us started. Okay? But the decision to keep doing it and make it effective has to be a personal one. It has to be a personal decision. How many of you in here, I'm just curious, were ordered to take music lessons of some kind when you were growing up, even though you hated it? Anybody? Okay, how many of you are still playing that same instrument? One. Very, very interesting, okay? Success. And by that, I mean the practice of expressing our talents to the best of our ability can only come from a deep sense of personal commitment, a love for our talent, and a love for the creative process itself. And a love for the creative process itself. Now, how does this apply to what we're talking about here today? Music? That's easy. If you want to expand your understanding of how to apply spirituality, real meaningful spirituality in your daily life, make a commitment to practice it, a personal commitment to practice it on a regular basis. But don't try to force it. Don't try to force it. You know, if somebody taught you meditation and you don't like meditating that way, find another way to meditate. There are all sorts of different ways, okay? If the message you receive here, for example, on Sunday morning, you go out and you go, I never really like that, then go somewhere else that means something with my blessing. Find a place that will say something, not that necessarily makes you uplifted, that's always a bonus, but something that makes you think. Find something that makes you think. You see, spiritual growth is a process. It is a process. And if you want to become good at something in your life, whether it's playing the guitar or creating prosperity or a loving relationship, whatever it is, start practicing. Now, how should I practice? How do I practice creating a relationship or doing anything else? Practice the way you want to perform. Practice the way you want to perform, okay? Don't worry about the final result. Set the creative process in motion. How do you know if you're doing it right? You'll know you're doing it right if you never want to stop. If you never, ever want to stop. You'll know if no matter how good you get, you'll keep practicing because you love getting better and better and better at the process. I mean, have you ever noticed that the most sought-after, famous, and fabulous musicians in the world, okay, are the ones that seem to love what they do? How many have been to Chastain Park here, okay? Have you ever seen a musician there who seemed like they were just putting in their time for a paycheck? On the other hand, you see people there who are just reveling in being on stage. Sting is a great example. You watch these people. These are people who always seem to be having fun because they love what they're doing. They're full of joy, whether they're performing or practicing. There's no difference to them. They're both important. They couldn't imagine doing anything else. Music isn't just what they do. It's something that reflects the essence of what they are. And they don't get stuck in one place. They try different things. You know, people like Paul Simon, Sarah Bareilles, who's fabulous, if you haven't heard from her, just created a Broadway show that she was starring in, wrote the music for it and everything. She was just a guitar player, singer, songwriter at one point. People like Stevie Wonder, you know, Paul Simon, did I say him? All these people, you can make your own list. You can tell that they are the music. They aren't just the person who wrote the music or performs the music. Emmett Fox, the great minister, once wrote this, and it was an essay he wrote called The Song of God. It's a few lines, so bear with me here. He says, "A song expresses the whole nature of the singer. The singer's instrument is not just the vocal cords, it's his whole body and his or her whole mind. If the singer appears to be sick or angry, these things appear in the song. If his heart is filled with joy and beauty and divine love, these things too are expressed in the song." And then he says this, I love it. He said, "We are the song of the divine singer, and celestial harmony is our nature." We are the song of the divine singer, and celestial harmony, which means harmony, you know, getting along, is our nature. As we learn to express our own individual song in the world and to the world as honestly and passionately as we can without fear or reservation, the world responds in kind. The world responds to us. And that's when our life experiences start to reflect the harmony that we are putting out, which just may be the first step that'll change the world, or at least our little part of the world, which is just as important. Because every time one person expresses themselves honestly and in a better way, the world gets a little better too. I want to finish with a story. And it's a true story from one of Robert Fulghum's books. You know who he is? The Kindergarten Guy, Everything I Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. He wrote a number of years ago. It's a classic. And anyway, this happened about 25 years ago, back in 1992, when the war in the former nation of Yugoslavia had completely destroyed the beautiful city of Sarajevo. I don't know if any of you have been there. And a picture appeared here in the States in the New York Times. So I want you to get this image. If you want, you can close your eyes, but just get this image. It's an image of a middle-aged man, okay, with long hair and a big bushy mustache. He's dressed in formal evening attire, black tie and tails, and he's sitting in a small cafe chair in the middle of the street in front of a neighborhood bakery where just a few days before a mortar shell had landed and killed 22 people who were waiting in line to buy bread for their families. The man's name is Vedran Smailovic, and he's a member of the Sarajevo Opera Orchestra, which hasn't played in quite some time because the opera house was destroyed early in the war. And as he sits there in this cafe chair, he's playing his cello. He's a cellist. He's playing this beautiful adagio in G minor. And every morning he comes out, and for 22 days he plays with sniper bullets and artillery shells falling all around him. 22 days, one day for every person who died. Now, he isn't a soldier. He doesn't hate anyone. He can't do anything about this war that's been going on for hundreds of years. All he knows is his music. So he plays. So he plays. And though he may not be alive today, it's been 24 years, the place where he played was turned into a shrine, a beautiful shrine for every ethnic group in the city the people who were killing each other, as a recognition of the best of humanity, that the best of humanity can always overcome the worst. But that's not the end of the story. Shortly after the picture appeared in the New York Times, an artist in Seattle saw the picture and read the story. And she gathered together 22 cellists to play in 22 different places around the city of Seattle for 22 days. And people came by the hundreds to listen to them. And it started spreading to other cities until 6 months later, 22 cellists played for the inauguration of President Bill Clinton in Washington, D.C., the new president. This was on the news all over the world, even in Sarajevo, where the one lone cellist could see that his message had been heard and seen by millions of people around the world. Now, did it change anyone or change anything? I don't know. They still got problems there. We got problems here. I'd like to think it changed something myself. But if nothing else, it shows us how powerful one single person can be when they listen to the music of their own soul and they play it for the rest of the world to hear. How powerful that person can be. That's why we all need to be aware that the spirit of life is always singing through us and singing as us. And the song that it's playing is really a love song to the world. It's a love song to the world. Our job is to open our heart and let the music out. Let that song out. This is the truth in your life. And this is the truth in mine. And so it is. So it is. All right. Thank you. All right. No, this is meditation time. Okay. Let's just take a moment. Relax. A lot of ideas there today. Take the ones that made you think, that have value to you. Set aside the others for later. And let's know this together. Let's know that each of us has the ability to be in harmony with the One. And as we become in harmony with the One, and others do the same, we become in harmony with each other. And that harmony is the most powerful thing we have to create a world of peace, of health, of prosperity, of safety, of joy, of love for every single person on the planet. No matter who they are, what their race, where they live, their age, gender, whatever it happens to be, we have the ability to create that harmony right where we are. Every single one of us, as we get in tune with the best part of ourselves and with the best part of our world, when we see things, we don't create discord by being angry or fearful or accusing people. Instead, we look for the good. We look for the good within every situation. We look for the good within everything that we do at work or when we're driving or when we're just listening to the news or going to the gym. We look for the good. And we recognize that every person is inherently good, even if their behavior may not be. And we recognize that every single person has the same power we have to change, to become better and better until they are completely who they are at the spiritual level. As we recognize this, we start to see ourselves as spiritual beings. Every single one of us here in the midst of this physical world. And as we recognize and get in touch with that spirituality, our life runs so smoothly. Not boring, but just smoothly. Events happen, things change, and we move with it like a surfer or a skier moves with the world around them. And we move because our soul is in tune with life. So knowing this, each one of us is able to heal, not just the things that we need to heal in our own life, but to help in the healing of others. So I know for me and for everyone here that anything we have going on in our life that needs to be changed in a better way, that needs to be healed, that needs to be made whole, that this moment it is done. It is done in consciousness. And now we begin to move with that peace of mind that we have decided to practice. So we practice peace, we practice harmony, we practice love, we practice joy, we practice all these things never becoming perfect, but always becoming better. This is the power we have, and I am grateful. I'm grateful that we have been given this gift to choose. I am grateful that we have been given the power to love. I am truly grateful for everything I have been given and everything I have yet to give. Knowing this, I accept this word as my truth and the truth for everyone here and everyone everywhere. And I release it into consciousness, letting it be that truth from this moment on. Please join me in saying, and so it is.